This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. While I was at the International Brotherhood of Magicians convention in San Antonio, Texas recently, I was fortunate enough to sit down with Gay Blackstone, who is the widow of the late Harry Blackstone Jr. I have known her for quite some time and have been wanting to actually do a longer podcast with her. We chatted once at the Abbott's get-together a while back, and I thought that if I could actually get a few moments of her time to pull her away from the madding crowd, perhaps we might be able to get a little bit more insight to Gay Blackstone, and so this was my opportunity. She came up and we sat in a quiet corner and got to chat for quite a while, and one of the things that we did during this podcast also was to use Facebook live streaming. That's a new function that Facebook offers, and the advantage of that is we get to see some questions that some of the viewers who are watching it at that particular time as it's being broadcast live out over Facebook, and we can answer a few questions. So that was kind of fun. So we gave that a try to see how that worked. And there were quite a few people who actually did tune in, and we get to answer some of their questions. So you get to kind of hear that in this podcast here as well. Gay is somebody, again, who all of you know or have heard of, and if you haven't, then you've been living under a rock and, you know, you're not a serious magician, because you need to know some of the people who have been instrumental in making magic what it is today, because from the past that her husband and her, and of course, Harry's father, Harry Sr., were both great magicians, as is Gay, and she is also currently the executive producer of the Masters of Illusion television series and the show that is also touring the world. And she's just a phenomenal woman. Of course, well, I give a little bit of information of her background during the podcast, but you can go to Wikipedia or any place else and find many of the of her statistics and what she has done. And it just goes on for pages if you go to Wikipedia to see what all that she has done, in which that she has been a director, a consultant, a lecturer, a producer, president of the Academy of Magical Arts, and named the 2007 Hollywood Women of Distinction and by the Hollywood Chamber of Commerce. She was also the, well, as I said, you can go and take a look at all that, but this is a very fascinating lady. While we were recording also, that I find myself often apologizing for sound problems, and in this particular case, we were recording using my laptop computer, and it went off for a short time, but that's a fortunate thing that we were actually doing the Facebook live streaming, because I was able to go back and I could record some of the audio from that, so you can actually hear the entire conversation, because she was talking about some phenomenal things about Harry Blackstone Sr. as well as Jr. and anyhow, we get caught up. It's not really distracting. It's just that the tonal quality of the first 15 minutes or so of our conversation was re-recorded, if you will, through Facebook, but the last part is a great quality. So all of the information, you'll be able to hear it. It's not a problem, certainly. It's just that there is a little bit of, if you're wondering why there's a difference, that's why. So I am going to now turn it over and let her do more of the speaking and me doing more of the listening and asking a few questions now and again. And I think you'll find some interesting things in her background that I certainly didn't know about, and perhaps you might learn then as well. So please enjoy this conversation with Gay Blackstone here on The Magic Word. Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com, and it really gives me great pleasure to talk to this guest here today, because she is someone who is past president of the Academy of Magical Arts, someone who has also received the Milburn Christopher Award,
and has also been identified as an outstanding woman in various places, not the least among magicians, of course, and being the Society of American Magicians and the International Brotherhood of Magicians International Ambassador, which means that she gets to travel the world on her own nickel. But gets to say, oh yeah, well I'm doing this on behalf of the people who aren't paying me. But beginning to share joy and magic everywhere. And her name is not Joy, but her name is Gay, because she is happy in And so we're so glad to have. And also, did I mention, by the way, that she is also was the wife of Harry Blackstone Jr.? Okay, you know who it is. Gay Blackstone, here she is. Hello, Gay. Good morning.
Good morning.
Glad to have you here this morning.
Thank you. It's fun to be here.
It is. It's great. So we're here at the International Brotherhood of Magicians Convention in San Antonio. And you guys have been through San Antonio, I'm sure.
Oh, absolutely.
This is not your first rodeo, as we'd say here in Texas.
Well, of course, remember, I grew up in Texas.
I forgot that you were.
Yes.
You Dallas girl?
Fort Worth.
Okay, close enough.
Close enough,
yes. The area.
Yes.
Okay.
I actually grew up in an area between Fort Worth and Dallas, an area called Richland Hills.
I thought you were going to say just a place called Wedlock. Well, actually, just a little bit outside that.
Yes.
Oh, Roger Klaus joke. And then when you were young, then you had moved from there with your parents?
Yes, I moved from there to California. Yes. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of an interesting time because my mother's family was New Orleans, and my father's family was in Texas. Mm-hmm. So summers and holidays were New Orleans, and school time was Texas. So it was an interesting and a different way to grow up. And then to go into the entertainment field, it was actually a nice background.
It's almost surreal.
It was. It made everything else seem that it was real automatically.
You were a dancer, been singing everything in as well, but when you met Harry, I guess, originally?
Yes, I'd already been doing a lot of television. People think that I probably just got into magic and entertainment with Harry, but I really started working when I was two, and I had a lot of experience. I was a television kid. You know, I did Dean Martin and Andy Williams and Jim Nabors. So
really?
I had a lot of television experience.
Now, in that, were you like one of the girls in the background who was dancing?
I was a gold digger with Dean
Martin. Were you a gold digger?
Yes.
I wish I would have known that up front. I love that show.
Oh, it was a lot of fun to do. And I was.
What was Dean Martin really like?
He was delightful.
Was he really? I mean, I hear different stories from one side to the other, but.
Because I was the youngest one on the show, they were trying to do this image of the young, sexy females, and I was hired. And I was a junior in college, and they didn't bother to ask my age. I mean, I filled out the paperwork, but I was 16. Okay. So they thought I was...
18.
They thought I was like 18 or 19 or 20.
Yeah.
And therefore, when legal found out how young I was, then I had to have a welfare worker, which kind of blew the image of these, the young, sexy things. So I had the welfare worker saying, I'm sorry, she has to have her milk and cookie break now.
That's so, funny, because you were a child actor,
child worker at that point, yes. So, he was fabulous to work with. And
he didn't really drink like everything. A lot of times just had water or something.
Well, he would come in and have a Tom Collins in the dressing room during rehearsal.
Okay.
One Tom Collins, not exactly the heavy drinker.
Yeah.
And as a gold digger, our main jobs were to get him to his mark for each segment. And he was very playful, and he wouldn't want to move. And we had to get him there any way we could, as long as whatever we did not show on camera.
Okay.
So,
I've heard stories about Soupy Sales.
This was just, and of course, I was dating his son, Dino, at the time.
Oh, really?
So it was,
so that's kind of was your end to being a gold digger.
Well, no, I didn't.
It was after that?
It was afterwards.
Oh, okay.
I met Dino later.
Wow.
And,
did you ever go with him on tour when he was? I mean, I'm getting way ahead of myself. There's so many things. Did you when he would like sing with Dino and the Playboys? Wasn't that the?
I didn't. I didn't at that
tour
point.
With him. Okay.
No, that was. I had to stay in school. There were certain things that my parents. I made a deal with my father. Actually, one of my college professors, because I didn't want to stay in school. Mm-hmm. School was boring.
Yeah.
And one of my professors made a deal that if I would stay in school, then my father would support me in whatever I wanted to do.
Awesome.
Because
now school meant all the way through college.
Yes, all the way through college. Yeah. So I did, and so I, because it was kind of odd. Mm-hmm. I have my degree is in physics. I have a major in physics and a minor in theater. Not your typical combination.
No, it's not something that you're going to be, writing and dancing in a play about the Big Bang Theory or something.
Yeah, so, that was it. And right now, though, I am on the Board of Arts and Letters for the California State Universities.
Oh, nice.
So I'm very much involved in education and the problems that we have in education and primarily the funding that we have, the problems with education. So Jerry Brown and I are regularly kind of go head to head. Oh, yeah, yes.
Not agreeing on everything.
We don't agree, the whole lottery system and why are we not getting more money from you know, lotteries and various things. So yes, we have regular meetings on this.
So I really got you sidetracked. So back to
the world of magic. Yes.
But Dean Martin, I was so interested. So you had to get him to hit his mark every time. And so then what? How did you just go about doing that?
We would tickle. Okay. We would pinch. We would move. Yeah. We would do whatever we needed to do to get him there.
Now, did they shoot 2 or 3 shows in a day? I mean, a lot of times I know.
Oh no, no, we
once a week.
As opposed to the way I shoot.
That's what I'm gonna ask you.
No, we would rehearse 4 days and then do a dress rehearsal
without him.
Without him. Yeah. Oh no. And Greg Garrison, who was the producer, I learned more from this man, probably in the world of television and production, than any other person I've ever worked with. Mm-hmm. We would rehearse for 4 days and then do a dress rehearsal and then a taping. Mm-hmm. And that was it. But it was 4 days rehearsal without Dean. Mm-hmm. And he would just come in and watch the dress rehearsal and then we'd shoot the live show with him. And the live show is done with an audience.
So it'd be a stand-in for him, I guess, when they kind of walk and drag mm-hmm. guests
yeah,
around or whatever.
Greg Garrison was the stand-in.
He was stand-in.
Yes.
Interesting.
So he knew the show backwards and forwards.
Yeah.
And he would do the stand-in for the rehearsal.
Yeah. Well, we are doing this live on Facebook, and actually we got a couple questions over here, I think. How about that? We've got, it looks like some people over here.
People are actually watching.
That's right.
Well, I'm glad I didn't wear my jammies.
Let's see. Do you make it back to Colon Mission very much? Well, of course you can make it back
to Colon
Mission.
Every year.
And does your family own a home or property there?
No.
That was from Baird Davis.
No. Harry Sr. sold Blackstone Island in the early 50s. And Harry Jr. never owned anything there. But we make it back, or I make it back every year now.
I know you make it. You'll see it in a couple weeks.
Oh, absolutely. I'm there every year with Greg and Debbie, and the rest of the family doesn't make it that often.
Yeah.
But they make it every few years.
Well, yeah, that you and Harry used to come every year, and it was a highlight.
In all the years, from about 1975 on, I think, let's see, we didn't make it. 1980, we were on Broadway, so we didn't make it that year. 1996, we were in Vegas and didn't make it then. Mm-hmm. Then he passed away in May of 97, so mm-hmm. But we did the burial there then later on. And since then, every year between then, we might not have made it for the entire period, but we would have made it for at least one day.
One day, in and out, if you had to go.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because much of the time we were working.
Yeah, but that was really a love and a passion.
Oh,
yeah.
Because that was sort of home. And even the kids, I mean, even though it wasn't home for any of us, mm-hmm. we felt like it was.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it was one of those places where, because the life that we led,
yeah.
and other places where we had to have security or various other things, mm-hmm. that was a place where the kids could walk free. They could go from the island to downtown.
Yeah.
It was an adventure, and it made them have a feeling of what it was like for Harry during the summers that he was there
growing up. Yeah, because that was where they went during the summertime.
Yes.
For those people who are listening who may not know the story about that and how they had Blackstone Island, I guess, and he had the home, and then each year that during the summertime that they would retreat to that, basically, and they kind of regroup
because
and make new shows.
Because theaters didn't have air conditioning.
Yeah.
So therefore, that was why, you know, if you ever go to theater in Europe, you know how hot it is in England in the theaters in the summer.
Sure.
Well, so American theaters, they didn't play. So they would go out from Labor Day to Memorial Day, mm-hmm. close in that range.
Yeah.
But during the summers, they would be at the island. And the whole thing was, if you didn't have anywhere to go, if you didn't want to go to your home or whatever, you could stay at the island and,
nice.
You know, they'd put the next season show together mm-hmm. and you'd have the camaraderie of everyone else at that point. And you know, it would be a bit like summer camp, I think.
But Harry Jr. didn't do that. I mean, that later. Is that right? So they sold the place then?
They sold, Harry Sr. sold it.
That's
there.
Been torn down, I think. Is that right?
No.
Or still there?
The barn has been torn down.
That's what I guess I was thinking.
But the house is still there.
Someone resides in that? And so
yes.
It's not something you go knock on the door and say,
we actually rented it once.
Oh, did
one year. We stayed there with the family.
How special.
And Harry Sr., though, before he left, burned all the posters and
what?
All the various things because, after all, who would want all those silly papers?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which is why there's not that much in the way
how
of
much paper for Harry?
Yeah.
Senior then. Let's see. I think there were a couple other questions people were asking. Let's see. What are you looking for in the new set of Masters of Illusions? What was your favorite show that you produced? And those are a couple of questions that Matt Roberts and. Was this? Looks like Kaden, I can't pronounce it. Vala Vieta?
Okay,
thank you guys for your questions.
We're in season 3 right now. We're just happily thrilled we're in season three for the CW.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's doing very well. And they're doing something a little different this year. They're doing a new show at 8 o'clock, 7 o'clock Central, and then at 8:30 or 7:30, they're doing an encore show. So we're on for an hour, and the numbers are holding very well.
That's
so
right.
So we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
And then, so there's an hour of Masters of Illusion, and so we'll see what happens for next season. So everybody watch, because when you're on network, the numbers play a major role in what happens.
Just like cruise ships, I guess. You know, what your ratings cards.
That's
like.
That's it exactly. So
yeah,
we'll,
yeah.
So we'll see.
Well. And the numbers, I would think, for CW, because it's not like a major network, you know, like ABC or Fox or NBC.
Well,
or
it is.
Is it really good?
It really is. It's one of your top five.
But is that one that's on your regular cable channels that you get?
You're a Nielsen. You're free.
You are.
You're the same thing. You are in your CW is one of your top five.
You're competing against the rest of them. Oh, interesting.
You are ABC, NBC, CBS, Fox, CW.
Just like that.
That's your top five networks.
I didn't know that.
Hmm. Remember, CW is also owned by CBS.
That's not Rupert Murdoch. That's
no.
Fox. Yeah, okay, CBS.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So you are part of your top five.
But that used to be like Warner or something, wasn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
But no, so you're in your same category.
The question kind of got ahead of me a little bit, because I was going to be getting in and asking about the Masters of Illusion, about how that kind of got started. Was that something that people had come to you, or you had this idea for a long time?
We didn't realize. Masters of Illusion started in 1994,
okay.
And Harry was the host. And at that point,
I may have a copy of that someplace.
David McKenzie, uh-huh. Who's the owner, president of Associated Television, David McKenzie was a kid doing magic years and years ago. In fact, as a teenager, competed in magic competitions like against Diana Zimmerman and all. I mean, this is someone who's had a love of magic for years.
Yeah.
And he bought the rights to FISM, and he did that, and Harry did it as a wraparound to FISMX.
Mm-hmm.
And then he would buy magic acts elsewhere, and it was a wraparound with Harry as the host.
Okay.
So that was how it originally started in 94, and it kind of progressed. And then in 2000, we had Franz Harari as the host.
I remember that
in
now.
2000
sure.
And 02, and I was one of the producers at that point. And then we started doing it more as the variety style of magic.
Right.
And prior to Harry's death, Harry and David had talked about the fact of doing it so that the show highlighted all different types of magic.
And allied arts, or just magic in particular?
Magic, but people forget that there's as many different types of magic mm-hmm. as there are music.
Mm-hmm.
And it was something that Harry was always very fond of and really wanted, because the general public doesn't think of all the different types of magic.
Mm-hmm.
And Harry said, this is something they think of it in Europe, all the different types of magic,
mm-hmm.
but in the U.S. they don't.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was a conversation that he and David McKenzie would have.
Yeah.
You know, like, what can we do so that the American public really understands that you've got so many different types of magic?
Yeah.
And how do you sell it without it feeling like it's
cheesy? Yeah.
And because we were already going away from networks feeling like, well, variety doesn't sell.
Mm-hmm.
We all know variety does sell.
Oh my goodness, yes.
But how many years where you go into a network that say, the American public doesn't want variety shows. However, they'd do an encore show of a Carol Burnett, and it'd be the highest rated show of the year. You'd talk to a network person that'd say, no, you just can't do variety.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but they were so contradictory to themselves.
That's networks. I mean, that's the executives.
And they still are.
Yeah.
You know. However, they're the ones who sign the checks.
Yeah.
And you, so
go with the, yeah.
So you smile and you say, of course.
Okay.
You know, they're going to be the buyers, you go with what they want.
And so do they direct a lot of them? I mean, by producing this, you're putting together and getting some ideas of the shows and whatnot, but do they kind of have the direction? Are they the ones who put Dean Cain in there, for an example,
well,
as the host? Or?
Yes, I would love, I know people give me a lot more credit on this. I would love to think that I really do certain things.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many people that I'd love to have on the show that I can't.
Not bad.
Because
what
I have to do is, yes, I have to submit a picture of everyone that's on the show, and they send back yes, yes, no, no, having nothing to do with the magic.
Wow.
They pick the look that they think fits their demographics, and having nothing to do with the magic.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And they've gotten a little better the last year or so, trusting me, trusting the team of David Martin, Al Swartz. I mean, this is the team. David Martin works hand in hand with me and with Al Swartz, but David Martin especially. And we're suggesting people, and occasionally we'll push on through, but primarily, you know, we turn in these pictures of people, and they'll go, oh, that person, they don't, what are you doing? That's not our demographics. And we'll say, really trust us on this one. And sometimes we can push somebody through, but most of the time they'll say, that's not our demographics. They don't know anything at all about the act. They're going strictly on the visuals. Mm-hmm. So as much as people say, well, gee, well, you know, why didn't they book that act? It has nothing to do with the act. It has to do with what they think of the demographics.
Okay.
And then you get into the magic. So it's, you know, there's so many elements that go into it. So if somebody doesn't get booked, also if someone's off of our radar, you know, so if you have an act or if you know someone that's really good and they're not booked, it may be because that we don't know them or we've forgotten about them. So, you know, it's like it has nothing to do with anyone personally. You know, it's like, oh, it's not that I don't like somebody or David Martin doesn't like somebody. It has nothing to do with that. It may be that A, we've forgotten about them. We don't know them. CW doesn't like their visual. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's so many elements that go into it. So everybody, you know, send links, whatever, all these various things. Also, it may be that they're doing something that three other people have already done, and so therefore they don't have material that's different. We can't repeat the same material.
So, right. And we all know in the world of magic, there's only so many things, you know. A straight jacket is a straight jacket is a straight jacket. Yes.
Right. And so many different illusions. And of course, there are only so many elemental effects that are the same, you know, as Witzke would say.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. You know, yes, Farrell does it on a roll of bolo. Okay, that's enough different. Nathan Fine does it while singing, you know, an Italian opera. Mm-hmm. Okay, that gives me something different. But otherwise to say, oh, you know, well, I do a card trick and it's really different because the inside of my pocket's lined in red polka dots instead of blue polka dots. They're not going to look at it and think it's different. I mean, this year we got down to things that we thought were different that we shot for the show and they went, I've already seen that. Well, mm-hmm. No, it's a really different, or we know it's totally different because it's a different methodology.
Yeah.
But visually to them, they say, I just saw that trick last week. And we're like, no, it's a different, and they go, uh-uh. So even within us having done it, mm-hmm. and they'll say, look, just like what we saw. So
therefore, check mark, that doesn't get on.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Interesting. Because I guess if it's a torn, restored newspaper, say, well, we saw the newspaper before, you know, well, it's a completely different kind of a thing or whatever. Or it's
mm-hmm. it's a learning experience for all of us.
Mm-hmm. Well, I wondered about that. I figured that people would probably be talking to you all the time saying, hey, I've got a great act. And I'm sure you're saying, yeah, that sounds great, but then they don't get on there thinking, well, Gay didn't like me. You know?
That's it exactly. Yeah. And there's a lot of things that I love personally that for whatever reason they don't. So, as I said, so I am always looking. Please feel free to submit things to me all the time.
Yeah.
Because, we are looking constantly. It's a very avarice medium.
Yeah.
And I love the fact magicians typically are saying to me, it's so fast, you know.
Right.
Well,
it is pretty boom, boom, boom. I mean, it's like one thing, the way that they're cut, you know, they're just showing one thing and then here's the net, and then Dean Cain will come back on and say, now here, let's do the next one.
Well, the American public
has a short attention span.
Has a very short attention span.
It has to do with reality shows, I think.
Well, so we're looking at things that are typically no more than 3.5 minutes. Mm-hmm. And many things that are, if you look at America's Got Talent, you give them 90 seconds.
90 seconds, good point.
So my favorite story, 2 weeks ago, we had on the flying piano.
Yeah.
Someone on Facebook said, oh, it's so nice to see the classics. Now, I don't think of the flying piano as a classic.
Yeah.
And someone else wrote and said, I really enjoyed it, but didn't it seem a little long? And I went, like suddenly, and this was, I think, on the magic, on the Academy of Magical Arts Facebook page. Mm-hmm. So I thought, here was someone in the magic world who was suddenly saying it seemed a little long and referring to it as a classic. The world is changing.
Yeah.
So, but it is. It's, you know, and I thought this undoubtedly was one of our younger members.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't someone in the mature category.
Who had seen and been around
yes.
as a basic comparison.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but,
right.
you know, so it's a different world and we're all learning with it.
Well, let's see. We've got a couple more questions, I'm sure, over here. Let's see. David Hinken had asked about the floating light bulb as one of the most fascinating tricks. Thoroughly enjoyed every time. Every time I see it, and it lives on. That so, let's see. Said he enjoys watching it every time, seeing it as well. And that's something that, that I think Darren Romeo does
well,
now.
Well, yes. I've been able to license. Well, first of all, let me go back and say, there's many wonderful magic pieces in the world, but I feel there are very few miracles in the world of magic, and the floating light bulb is a miracle. And I've been able to do it as an intellectual property.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of the very few pieces of magic that has been able to be listed as an intellectual property.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, I've been able to then do a license with it. And I have two licenses with it now. One is with Darren Romeo. And Darren is now in Pigeon Forge
right.
performing it 6 days a week. And then Hans Klock is in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
And he has it licensed. And Hans performs it in Europe. So, and I may do maybe one more licensing with it. Probably out of the country also.
Now, licensing, that's different than patenting something, because
yes.
if you do, then you have to expose the secret because
yes.
you publish it. Basically.
Because a licensing, the person never owns it.
Mm-hmm.
I can, all the ownership remains with me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm then, they pay a fee
yeah.
to do it,
mm-hmm.
and I control it, but at the same time, I also protect them in it. I supply everything with it. I teach them to do it, and, you know, any problems or elements or things that come up, I have to solve it for them.
Yeah.
So it's...
I was just thinking about licensing and things like that when I'm watching Shark Tank and they're getting these different ideas. I think it'd be kind of interesting. You probably have seen a lot of different ideas and things, certainly over the years, in magic and trying to judge things like for the show or whatever other reasons or like the Magic Castle or other places. Have there been some things that you've seen that have been particularly creative, inventive, or interesting that you think, wow, this I've never seen anything like this before?
A few things.
Mm-hmm.
Or
maybe it might be a performance of something.
Oh,
that, yeah.
Yes, every once in a while you see something that is, someone has taken a classic piece and mm-hmm. has done something very clever and very different and very original with it. Unfortunately, it doesn't happen as much as you'd like.
Yeah.
But it does happen, and, you know, it's normally with performance style. You know, because I think we've all seen those performers that we know immediately, they've got it.
It.
They've just got it.
Yeah.
And no matter what they're going to do, they're going to have their own style is going to be over the size. The magic will not be over them. They will be always over the magic.
Right. It's about that person. I'm thinking like Danny Cole, for an example. You know, there's somebody who is... He doesn't act that I can't imagine anybody else doing. You know, it's uniquely him. And there are a lot of people, Jeff Hobson, you know, different people
mm-hmm.
They can give away all their tricks and secrets, but nobody can beat them.
Yes.
You know?
I mean, it was like Harry. Mm-hmm. When Harry was there, the magic was his premise for being on stage.
But he was bigger than the magic.
He was always bigger than the magic. Many times in reviews, they would say, we're not sure whether we should be reviewing him as a magician or as a comic.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was his premise for being on stage, but he was first and foremost a communicator.
Right.
And that was the reason for it.
He was a journalist. That's right.
He was.
In college. That was his major, wasn't
and,
it?
Yes.
In radio and television,
I think. Yes, and that's what he did for many years mm-hmm. before going into magic.
Right.
So those were his reasons, and yet the magic was always very strong, but it never overpowered him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. I do remember that he had written for the Smothers Brothers, I think, for a while.
Well, he was the associate producer of the Smothers Brothers.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yes.
I remember he was a writer. Oh, okay.
No, he wasn't a writer for them.
Okay.
No, he was, because at that point you had Steve Martin and you had the writers on that show were so incredible. I should remember all
the
others.
Blank.
yes, absolutely, I went blank. Besides Steve Martin, you had... they're going to kill me. I'll come back to it.
Okay.
They had five or six writers that were Albert Einstein and Yeah, because I have to say, because they were on opposite, they were on CBS and I was an NBC kid, I didn't watch the show. So I knew them all later.
Yeah.
And they were a great group.
Well, and also that you guys had worked in on Broadway in one of the longest running Broadway
shows. We still hold the record for the longest running illusion show on Broadway.
Okay.
And at that point, we were at the Majestic, which was the flagship theater of the Schuberts. Mm-hmm. It was the largest theater at that point on Broadway.
Wow. And how many shows, or what was the long?
We were there. It was 181 shows.
Okay.
So it was like, what was it, 7.5 months.
Yeah. I was thinking 5 or 6 months or something longer than that. Then Doug Henning had a long show, his magic show,
but it wasn't an illusion show.
That was really more of a musical.
It was a scripted show. It was a musical that had magic in it. Mm-hmm. Ours was not a scripted show. It was, and I say this lovingly, it was an old fashioned magic show.
Yeah.
It was magic after magic after magic after magic. There was no storyline. There was no song and dance. There was dancing and there was music, mm-hmm. but it wasn't a storyline. It wasn't, you know, it was a variety show. It was segments. There was the Oriental number. There was the Chinese number. There mm-hmm. was the circus number. I mean, there were flower garden. There, you know, it was the dancing hanky. I mean, you know, it was the floating light bulb. It was the committee. It was all these segments.
Yeah.
But it was not a scripted show.
Mm-hmm. What was it like traveling with the elephant? I mean, I think about the circuses nowadays, and they no longer have the elephants. And I would think that the animals you guys traveled with.
Oh, well, we now laugh about the fact that our daughter Bellamy was probably 5 years old mm-hmm. before she realized not everybody had an elephant as a pet.
Everybody's got an elephant.
You know, because whatever you have as a child is normal.
Yeah.
So we had an elephant. We had a tiger. We had a llama. You know, we had a donkey. Mm-hmm. We had rabbits. We had doves. You know, and we had the entire elephant, and we had the entire animal truck. Great story. Hal Prince. We got this wonderful letter from Hal Prince. He said, last night I went to see Barnum. Mm-hmm. Before the show, I saw this elephant. I love elephants. He said, at intermission, I saw 4 silk elephant legs go across the stage. I thought, I'll see the real elephant in the second half. He said, watch the second half of the show. Barnum's a good show. He said, however, I wanted to see an elephant. He said, walked outside. I saw the elephant again. It was getting into the truck that said the Black Sun Magic Show. Tomorrow night, I'm going to see the Black Sun Magic Show. I love elephants.
I'm going to see an elephant. That's funny.
Because also, every night, Jennifer Sardi from Sardi's restaurant would come over with this box of lettuce and broccoli and all these vegetables. Mm-hmm. And so we used to say the elephant was catered by Sardi's.
Wow.
You know, and it was great. And the elephant mm-hmm. was a love. I mean,
what was her name or his name?
Misty.
Misty, okay.
And in fact, Misty was just euphonized recently because she was at a sanctuary in Northern Carolinas mm-hmm. Because her arthritis had gotten so bad that she was in such pain that they had to. This was maybe a month or 6 weeks ago. In fact, for people on Facebook, they can go back. Bellamy wrote a lovely tribute mm-hmm. because Bellamy thought of Misty as her closest friend as a child.
Yeah.
You know.
Grew up with Dumbo, basically.
That was it, exactly. And but Misty had, you know, this is what she lived her life mm-hmm. there, and it was a great thing. But when you travel with all these things, it was a different time, a different period. Did we have a few animal rights people who questioned it? Mm-hmm. Yes. And yet, when you came to see the animals, they lived as well, if not better.
Yeah.
Oh, mm-hmm. they had 2 trainers who lived with them. In fact, Reggie, he grew up with, his father had gotten the elephant when Reggie was 5 years old. Mm-hmm. So literally, he was with this animal until he was 30. So, you know, this was the sort of thing. And these animals were trained on hand commands.
Oh.
So
they could be off stage and then kind of be waving and the elephant would lift its leg.
Yeah, exactly.
Kind of,
both the tiger as well as the elephant worked on hand commands. They worked on voice commands, and they worked on hand commands. And this elephant would be backstage in tight spaces and would do runarounds, and you'd go, Misty, trunk. And Misty would lift her trunk so you could run under. Yeah. And, you know, I mean, so it was... It was a different world. It was a different time.
Sure.
And different training.
And travel by train, I assume.
No. We didn't travel by train. No, we were about... Most shows, we did it, we did everything a little different. Most shows do Broadway, and then they do the national tour, and then they do the bus and truck.
Okay.
Not us. We started with the bus and truck, and then we did national, and then we did Broadway. Because it actually... Broadway was just one stop on 181 cities, because that's what it was. I mean, Broadway was fabulous and wonderful, but we were still continuing to work and do other cities. No, we never traveled by train. Harry Senior traveled by train, but by the time we were doing it in the late 70s and 80s and all, trains weren't there.
Yeah, they didn't have the same.
We had our own bus.
Okay.
We were the early style of rock and roll. In fact, we bought this bus. I picked the colors, did all these things. We had a sauna. We had all these great things on the bus. And at that point, then after we stopped using it, Van Halen rented it for quite a while. Mm-hmm. And, and of course now with Masters of Illusion, we're back.
Back on the bus.
Yeah. I mean, I love the fact that I'm traveling with the 30-year-olds, you know, back on the bus and the whole thing.
Yeah.
It's on the sleeper buses.
Reminds you of those days.
Oh, you know, I laugh, and, you know, and they kid me about the fact that I'm the last one to go to sleep and I'm the first one up in the mornings. And
well, that's what a house mother's supposed to do.
That's exactly, you know. I'm there and, the buses we have now are a little different.
Yeah.
I actually think mine was a little better. Mm-hmm. You know, I had things like the cedar-lined closet. We had the safe on the bus, but we have the kitchens now. We had the kitchen then.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of fun things.
But the actual elephant would be on a truck.
They had their own truck.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And in the truck, they had the freezer they had a refrigerator and they had a freezer, then the generator that kept their food and all, so that their food was all done right for them.
Right.
It was divided. The elephant had about a quarter of the truck. And then maybe a little more than a quarter of the truck was for the elephant. Cause it was a 53 foot semi and it was for the elephant, and then it was divided for the track, for the tiger, cause the tiger had its space, and for the donkey and the camel,
quite a menagerie.
Oh, it was. It was our own little
zoo.
Yes, you know. And they all got along.
Yeah.
You know, and, Roy will tell you that the best friend for an elephant is a turkey.
I didn't know that.
Yes. And in fact, at their place, there's always a turkey with an elephant.
Mm-hmm.
So, we did not have turkey. Had we known that, we would have. Yeah. I didn't know that till later.
Well, let's see if we got a couple other questions over here. Let's see. I think that kind of got caught up there with some of them. So what was your the favorite show, the best show that you ever produced? Going back to the, I don't know if that's a fair question because there are other
It's kind of tough. You know, I've also done several World Magic Awards.
Yeah.
And those have been great fun to do also. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, and I've been so fortunate.
Now, those are the AMA awards?
No, the AMAs are... I've never produced an AMA show.
Okay.
Our last AMA show was produced by Dale Sawick, who did an incredible job. Dale and the group, it was Dale and Steve Dick and Joan Lawton and Joe Furlow. I mean, they did really a terrific job. But, World Magic Awards are also done for television. Mm-hmm. In fact... One of my proud moments on that was the fact World Magic Awards 08, Neil Patrick Harris was my host.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked him to be the host, and it was the first thing he'd ever hosted.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought he'd be a great host.
Yeah.
And I feel that I'm the first one to recognize that. And he went on from there to host Everything in the World. Yeah. But I was the one who said, this is it.
You've got it. You've got
See, you've got it. See, I recognize that. So I think he should credit me for putting him on the road to hosting. So,
Well, he was the president then of the AMFN for a while. Yeah. Was that, did he follow you? Or?
Yes, he was. Yes, okay. He was after me, but yeah. So, but Royal Magic Awards, Neil was my host 1 year. Mm-hmm. I had Sir Roger Moore as my host 1 year. I had Robert Wagner 1 year. And of course, RJ and Harry were very close friends. Oh, so yeah. Having RJ was my host in 2009.
Yeah.
And that was great fun because the fact that he and Harry were such good friends, it was, it was kind of almost like having Harry back at some point. And, so, you know, that's been a fun show to do because that, We're able to give out awards. In fact, last night I loved the fact when we were when Johnny Thompson and Pam were being honored. Yeah. One of the things that with the amazing Jonathan when they were showing him, he had his two World Magic Awards on the table, yeah. which I kind of it was kind of a fun thing for me to see. But
yeah, the movies awards out of the way.
Uh-huh.
I understand, Johnny, you're getting some awards tonight. You probably haven't gotten this one yet.
So it was kind of a little inside joke that was great. That was great fun.
Well, you and Harry have done so much, traveled so many places, met a lot of people, and you continue then with your life of doing so many things and producing magic shows.
But I had to reinvent myself. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, because with Harry, yes, it was wonderful. But when we were together, Harry was the star, which was fine. Mm-hmm. Because I'm a big believer that rarely are there two stars in a situation.
But behind every great man, you know.
Because if you look at a star, there's a point to it.
Good point.
Yeah. And Harry was that point.
Yeah.
But I was the assistant.
Mm-hmm.
And that was fine. But it's really difficult to be a magic assistant without a magician. You know, that Harvey technique just really doesn't work.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, after Harry's death, my mother looked at me and said, what are you going to be when you grow up this time?
Yeah.
And I've tried a lot of things.
Yeah.
Some successful, some not. And
you got to keep swinging,
you know, and I'm very grateful. David McKenzie called me and said, you know, I'm doing this show. I need you to be one of the, you know, executive producers.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, I don't know if I know how to be an executive producer. And my daughter looked at me and said, Mother, you're the only one who doesn't think you know how.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's good. She did that.
I really will admit the first show I did, I was much more the social director, but I learned very quickly. And I'm a good producer.
Now, what does exactly that mean as a producer? What are your responsibilities? I often see that on television or movies, executive producer or produced by or whatever.
It means different things in different projects.
Oh, okay.
Primarily what it means is, at the end of the day, you're responsible for that show and every element of that show. It doesn't mean you're going to do every element of it. But at the end of the day, you are responsible for that show having each element working and you're responsible for either making sure the financing is there, making sure the network or wherever it is happy with that show, with all elements in that show being the right elements for in magic, making sure if it's, as we frequently do, frame by frame so that nothing is exposed,
right.
Solving all the problems, making sure the visuals are there, sound is good, whatever it needs, that's what an EP is responsible for. They're responsible for, at the top of that point, everything working. You don't do it all.
Yeah.
But you're making sure that everybody underneath you is doing their job and that you've gotten the right people to do their job and that at the end of the day, when you look at it or whatever, it's right.
But is there only one executive producer then?
No.
Okay.
There's, on Masters of Illusion, David McKenzie, who's the president of Associated Television, he's there. Then I've got David Martin, executive producer. I've got Al Swartz, executive producer. And David, Al, and I work as a team. Mm-hmm. People will recognize Al's name from Dick Clark, many, many years experience. And we work together as a team. We all kind of have our expertise of things that we know about. And we all look at things a little differently. But that's what makes it work.
So it's not like there's too many cooks in the kitchen and everybody's saying, well, you should be doing this because they know each job.
We know each job, but then there are times that we all look at things together and we all have our own opinion.
Mm-hmm.
And it's what gives it the balance because sometimes we'll look at it and say,
you have to have that.
Because, you know, David will say one thing, Al will say something else, and we'll all go, oh, yeah. Because not one person is not going to catch every mistake mm-hmm. or every problem. And it's with this whole team that you look at it and you go, oh, yes. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, I mean.
Sometimes you can't step back and you have to, though, to because see the big picture.
You actually have to. You know, I mean, Al tends to write Al writes the copy for Dean Cain because he can write in Dean Cain's head yeah. and his voice. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I couldn't do that. Mm-hmm. You know,
Johnny was talking about last evening, about how when he works with different magicians, that he has to actually get in their mind, like with Matt Franco or whoever
exactly.
he's working with, and think like them.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. You have to do that. And yet at the same time, I may catch visually mistakes that Al wouldn't see, mm-hmm. you know, and I could go, whoops, you know, I saw a flash, or I see something that they wouldn't see, but that doesn't mean that other magicians watching it aren't going to see also. So that's why we all work together,
right.
you know. And it's not that one person is any more important than another one. Everybody has to do their job.
Right.
And,
yeah. It's interesting. Well, let me see if I got another question over here of somebody. I think people are kind of starting. It is Sunday morning, so maybe not as many people are are watching.
Well, and on the East Coast, it's not too early, but on the West Coast, it's quite early.
They haven't woken up yet.
Yes.
That's right.
Sleeping in today.
I had spoken with you a while back on the podcast, very briefly, when I think we were in the get-together, and I'd asked you a question about what was a memorable moment, and you were talking about being trapped in it was the Batania or something, I think, or you're there for a long time. Can you recount that story again?
I don't even know which one it was.
Well, tell another one.
Okay, let's see. Memorable moments, good and bad. There are so many at different times because then they're all funny. I mean, yeah. They're not all funny, but, you know, things happen in magic, mm-hmm. good and bad, and especially for assistants mm-hmm. because, you know.
You can be locked in a trunk for a while.
you know. One year we were doing a corporate show.
Yeah.
We were doing a Honda show, introducing the Arrows. So, and we were doing it in Reno. So we had this brilliant idea that we were going to use the drum would be the opening because the drum would be the...
That's what it was. It was a drum.
Okay.
Not the baton.
Oh, okay. We were doing this and okay. And, you know, we were in Reno, R-E-N-O, Honda, O, Aero, A-E-R-O, mm-hmm. this whole thing. So we created this, and, you know, curtain was going to be open. It would be this whole thing. No one thought about the fact that it had to be set early. Then there was a 2.5-minute opening music piece before the number even started. So all in all, it was like, curtain's open. It's 2.5 minutes, the whole number. And it's like, suddenly, I'm going to be in this illusion for... like 12 minutes, 8 minutes, whatever it was. It's mm-hmm. like, this is not the normal thing that you're doing. You're loaded in the illusion that music starts. You're off and going. So it was like, all right. And we didn't think about it until like the day of. This is not a large load space.
Yeah.
It is not a comfortable load space. I am, in fact, Craig Dickens, the piece is online for sale. And Craig Dickens was looking at it, and he said he was trying to calculate this. And he said, he's looking at it going, that's 3.5 inches, it's this. And I am in there with a headpiece, mm-hmm. 50 flags that are in two bags, two large flags, a torch. I'm in stiletto heels. And there was no space allowed for a head or a neck. Mm-hmm. Now, so, you know, I'm in this, and you're trying not to get cramps.
Right.
You know, the neck is, you know, so you're breathing, and, you know, and of course, fortunately, there is a piece at one point where it's like, okay, I have to have air. I really have to have air. So it's like, a piece has been cut out and there's been fabric put over it, so it's not solid wood. You are getting air, but you're breathing air through fabric.
Yeah.
You know, so yes, it was one of those times when, let's just say, meditation mm-hmm. came in very handy, trying to breathe your way. And never in all my life was I so glad to get out of an illusion.
And you were in there for how long total?
Oh, I think totally. It had to be somewhere between 7 and 10 minutes.
Wow. Obviously, you're not claustrophobic.
No.
Because some people, I think, would get in there for just 30 seconds, they'd freak out.
Oh, absolutely.
Being assistant's not for everyone.
No, it's not. It really isn't. Mm-hmm. And last year, from a car accident. I had to have an MRI. Mm-hmm. And they said, you know, are you going to be okay? And I thought, how long is this taking? They said, oh, well, you know, it, you know, it's probably going to be 10 minutes. And I thought, big deal.
Big
you, know? You know, it's like they said, well, you know, your feet will be out. I thought, yes, you know, it's not bad at all. So,
Well, speaking of that, and the buzzsaw illusion that I've been doing that for so long.
The buzzsaw, it was not my favorite ever. Hmm. At the first time,
my wife's either. Kathy's not real wild about that. I know it's going to go okay, but it just freaks her out.
Well, and the first time I did the buzzsaw, we were doing it for a television show, and we were supposed to rehearse it on Thursday. We were Hocus Pocus, New York City. Mm-hmm. Dick Cavett, it had just been built, so we'd never really done it. I'd been in it, but not with the blade going and the whole thing.
Yeah.
Mark Wilson is doing a car vanish. Didn't work. Having problems with it, so we don't get to it. Okay, so we're going to do it on Friday. Car vanish still isn't working. We don't get to it. It's now Saturday morning. Don't worry. We'll do it. Day is going on. We don't get to it. Don't get to it. Well, unbeknownst to me, Walter Miller, who is the director, said to Harry, okay, it's getting late in the day. We're going to shoot this, but if we don't get it on this first take, it's not going to be in the show because we're running out of time. We're at the Ed Sullivan Theater. It's all union. Costs are what they are.
Yeah.
So we start into this, and I am screaming, stop. Harry's not stopping.
Oh, my.
I realize that he's not stopping.
And the blade's coming.
It's going through. All right. We continue. We finish. Charles Reynolds, who at that point said to me, Gay, I really didn't realize what a really good actress you are. None of them realized at that point that in one of the adaptations that had been made in the new version, that the safety had been changed from metal to stainless steel.
And you can go through stainless steel.
Well, stainless steel is an even heat conductor.
Oh, okay.
So, yes.
Red hot.
Red hot. So, yes, I was injured. Yes, I healed. Yeah, I have a scar. To this day, when I see Dick Cavett, he looks at me and says, how's your back?
Yeah.
He also said to me that day, if you ever decide you want a divorce, I will testify on your behalf of cruel and unusual punishments. So, you know, those are the things that happened to magic assistants.
Yes.
It was changed immediately. It was one of those accidents that occurred because people thought they were doing better things had we had a chance to rehearse it. Although, had we had a chance to rehearse it, there would have been no way we could have changed it.
Yeah.
And it probably would have been worse because we would have still had to have done it.
Yes, right. Yeah, right.
So, you know, all being said, so when you go back and see that, realize that was the first time it was ever done with that. And
only.
And yes, it was changed after that.
And it was true horror.
It was true horror, yes.
Well, it's interesting you mentioned Charlie Reynolds, because I had him in my mind. I was going to ask him, I know such a dear friend.
Absolutely.
A number of years. What did he do to help in everything with you and Harry?
Charles was our eye in the audience.
Okay.
And every magic act, big or small, needs that eye in the audience. Mm-hmm. You cannot be your own eye in the audience. Mm-hmm. Now, videotaping is great, but even when you videotape yourself and look at it, it's not the same. Because even when you're watching yourself, you still have a preconceived idea of what you're doing.
You need a third party perspective.
You need a third person. You need that third perspective. And Charles was that eye in the audience. And, of course, his magic knowledge was so phenomenal, his history and his knowledge and things. And that's what Charles did. He also was the writer for much of the openings and the storylines of things. The whole Americana, he wrote the whole thing about, you know, in every village and town. And which gave it a perspective of why you were doing it.
Yeah.
And it gave everyone a way of going back in time and understanding it.
Mm-hmm.
Which once it did, it gave it a whole different feeling.
Yeah.
In certain things, because it then took the audience, it allowed you to immediately go back to your childhood or go back into a place in time. It was like you're entering into a film. Mm-hmm. It started you into a fantasy and allowed you to be there mm-hmm. and then start into your imagination immediately. And that's what you need to do in magic. Children do it, but as adults, we don't.
You've lost it.
And mm-hmm. it allowed the audience to go there and become part of that immediately, which makes the magic even stronger.
Yeah. Wow. Well said. You know, as we start to wrap up over here, that because I've been here for just a little while, and I appreciate your time on this then as well.
This has been great fun.
It has, hasn't it? I do want to say also to thank you because, unbeknownst to you, that this is actually my 300th podcast.
Oh.
So I'm honored, really honored to have you special as that guest. I'm going to actually release this later, so I won't be saying the 300th, but just for those who are listening will realize that this actually is the 300th. And so very special guest. I'm so very happy and pleased.
Well, this has been delightful.
It's been a lot of fun. Well, as you know, the name of my podcast is called The Magic Word. So my question then to you, that you lived a magical life, what is your magic word? And it could be a phrase, a sentence. What is your philosophy of life? What's important to you? When you wake up in the morning, what drives you? And that changes. When I ask people tomorrow what their magic word is, it may change, but sometimes your philosophy stays the same and true. What's yours?
My philosophy is when you live in a world, you have to give to the world.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you don't give to the world, you get nothing back.
Wow. And you've been giving a lot, you know, over the years, certainly. Okay, thank you very much. I appreciate you being over here. And thanks also to the people over on Facebook who are
absolutely
asking some questions too. It was kind of great for them to be up this early in the morning. Excellent. And so, until next time, that was Gabe Blackstone, and this is Scotty L.
Well, this certainly was an honor for me to have Gabe Blackstone as my guest on this very special episode. And I thank you very much, Gabe, for taking your time and chatting with me here. As I said, this was a special episode, although this was posted as the 304th podcast sequentially. Whenever I was recording this, I was intending for this to be my very special 300th, kind of marking that milestone, I guess, with a very important person here who is considered by me at least the First Lady of Magic. But because I was doing updates from the International Brotherhood of Magicians annual convention in San Antonio, I had daily podcast updates there. And so it didn't make sense to try to interrupt that and stick this in. So anyhow, I think you get the general idea. And so I, again, want to thank Gay, and thank you guys for listening. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did, having the opportunity to chat with her. And I want to also this week congratulate to those four winners who had won each of two different DVDs offered by Carl Andrews in last week's contest. One of the DVDs was called No Jacket Required, and the second was Making a Living Performing Close-Up Magic. And the winners of those DVDs are Steve Gallagher, Kevin Capinos, Orlando Ferrer, and Chris Stockton. Congratulations, guys. I am glad that you had an opportunity to get in and register for this. And for those of you who might have missed that opportunity, be sure and listen to future podcasts because you don't want to miss out on the opportunity where you can win some pretty cool free stuff that gets to be offered by some of my guests from time to time. And these will be sent out to you straight away, and the shipping, of course, is provided by some of the Friends of the Magic Word, who, through their generous financial donations, will allow me to make these gifts possible so we can send those out. If you would like to help out, then certainly any donation you make will be appreciated, whether it's $1, $5, $10, $20, or $100 on a one-time or an ongoing basis. Please look at the magicwordpodcast.com and see how you can become a friend of the Magic Word. Anything that you can do will certainly be appreciated. Well, again, one of the reasons that I wanted to publish this podcast with Gay Blackstone is because in a few weeks she will be attending the Abbott's get-together in Colon, Michigan, and I'll be there also along with some daily updates, and I might have an opportunity to say hello to her again. But if you happen to attend that convention and you've had an opportunity also to listen to this one, you'll have a little bit more insight and some other conversational things that you can discuss with her when you do see her. Well, I think we've reached the end of another hour together, and I appreciate your time and being here with us. And so, until next time, stay well, get booked, and consider giving to the world. This is Scotty out.